This episode discusses adult subject matter, including descriptions of sexual abuse of a child, and is intended for adult consumption only. Listener discretion is advised. If you have been affected by sexual violence, free confidential support is available 24/7 through RAIN's National Sexual Assault Hotline at 800-656-4673 and online at rain.org. It's April 14th, 2021, Greenfield, Massachusetts. The sound of a siren wails through the town as tires screech on the tarmac. A state police car pulls up outside of a hospital, and seconds later, an officer climbs out, determination written all over his face. But the officer hasn't come to the hospital to visit a sick relative. He's here on official business. Today, a mystery that has frustrated authorities, intrigued the press, and haunted local families for almost half a century could be solved right here, right now. The officer strides into the building and pauses briefly at the front desk to ask for directions. Then, he rushes down the corridor, footsteps echoing off the walls as he goes. He comes to a stop in front of a thin, windowless door, knocks twice, then pushes it open. The officer has seen pictures of the man he's here to speak with, but the face that stares back at him from the hospital bed now is barely recognizable. The patient's face is lined and pale, worn with age. His head is propped up on a mountain of pillows, and his frail body lies still in bed. Every few seconds, he's plagued by a rattling cough, which leaves him sweaty and breathless. The patient is 80 years old and barely able to move. With what looks like enormous effort, he smiles politely at the officer and beckons him closer to his bedside. Noticing the weakened condition the patient is in, the officer doesn't want to waste another second, so he sits down and starts to speak. He hurriedly explains that he's here to talk about a cold case from 1972, almost 50 years ago. It's a case that ripped apart the nearby town of Springfield and shook the small community to its core. The unsolved murder of a 13-year-old boy called Danny Croteau. The officer goes on to say that there have been some recent developments in the case, small details which have led police to their number one suspect. New evidence suggests beyond a doubt that the elderly patient lying in the hospital bed was involved in the murder. How exactly and why, they don't yet know. But that's what the officer's here to find out. The officer tells the patient that he'll be recording their conversation. Everything that's said can and will be used against him. After emphasizing the seriousness of the crime and the potential life sentence attached to it, he pauses briefly, allowing his words to sink in. The officer perhaps expects some sort of reaction from the patient, an angry denial, a tearful response, or maybe stony silence. However, to his surprise, the patient accepts his words with a slight nod. Blinking his eyes slowly, the patient clears his throat and starts to talk. As it turns out, contrary to what he's told police these past 49 years, the patient does know something about the unsolved murder of Danny Croteau. Over the following days, the elderly, frail man in the hospital bed will provide details and facts about the murder which have never been heard before. He'll take the officer on a haunting, twisted journey as he unravels the part he claims to have played. But how trustworthy are the words of a sick 80-year-old man approaching death? Is it possible that his mind is playing tricks on him and his stories have little truth? Or can his recollections be taken as accurate, factual accounts and help solve one of Massachusetts' most enduring mysteries? To find out, we'll have to go back to 1972, when a brutal murder shook the town of Springfield. At the moment of death, people often have an overwhelming need to get their biggest secret off their chests. From murder, fake identities, illicit affairs, and even government cover-ups, this show dives deep into the world's most explosive deathbed confessions. This is the story of an elderly man called Richard Levine, of the words he spoke as he lay dying. It's about a case that went unsolved for almost half a century. a cold-blooded murder that rocked a small community, the people in power who helped cover up the prime suspect, and a deathbed confession given 49 years later, which could finally provide a grieving family with the closure they so desperately need. I'm Estefania Hageman, and this is Deathbed Confessions.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all. But it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's Saturday, April 15th, 1972, Springfield, Massachusetts. Early morning sunlight filters through the branches that brush the banks of the Chicopee River. Last night's rainfall glistens like jewels on the leaves. Despite the murky-looking water in the river, it's a popular spot for fishermen, and its banks are frequently lined with people. At around 8:25 a.m., as the pale sun breaks through the rain clouds, a man makes his way down to the river, fishing rod in hand. There's a slight chill in the air, and he wraps his coat around him as he reaches the water's edge. The man scans the surface quickly, deciding where to cast first. But his gaze is interrupted when he sees something strange. 5 feet or so from where he stands, floating face down, is what looks like a body. The fisherman shuffles closer to get a better look. As he does so, the horrific reality becomes clear. It's the body of a boy. The fisherman gasps in horror, frozen to the spot. After a few seconds of panicked disbelief, he turns and runs back up to the riverbank to call for help. It's not long before the Chicopee River is swarming with police, both local and state. The officers know that they need to work quickly if they're going to get any worthwhile forensics. It's rained heavily through the night, and more is forecast to follow. If they're not fast, evidence will be washed away. Once police have retrieved the body from the river, 2 things become obvious. To start with, the fisherman's guess was right. It's the body of a young boy. Police officers presume he was just a teenager. Second, his death was no accident. A wound on his head indicates he was attacked. While searching the body for some form of identification, they pull out several pages of yellow paper from the boy's jacket. The pages are dripping with water, and the ink on them is smudged, but the officers can just about make out that it's an exam paper. On the front, there's a name. Scribbled in rough handwriting, it says that the paper belongs to a 13-year-old boy called Danny Croteau. With the boy's identity all but confirmed, officers set about examining the crime scene. It's an easier job than expected, as the scene is laden with evidence. Just feet away from the river, police officers see a rock covered in blood. They're pretty sure this was the murder weapon. Further along the bank, almost 100 feet from the shore, they find more blood on the ground. It looks like there was a struggle here. Whoever killed Danny Croteau must have attacked him first, then dumped his body in the river. What's more, there's a tire track nearby, one which surely belongs to the killer's car. With this wealth of evidence under their belts, the officers hope they can start putting the pieces of the puzzle together. Maybe these clues will tell them who murdered Danny Croteau and why. But there's one thing that has to be done before they answer these questions. The officers need to break the tragic news to Danny's parents. As it turns out, Danny's mother and father, Bunny and Carl Croteau, already suspect something is wrong. When police officers return to the station that afternoon, they learn that the Croteaus have reported Danny as missing. He didn't come home for dinner last night, and nobody's seen him since the previous afternoon. For the police officers, this is all the proof they need to be certain that the body in the river really does belong to Danny. So they call the Croteaus home and invite his parents to the police station. Surprisingly, though, when Danny's father, Carl, arrives, he's not accompanied by his wife. Instead, he's with an older man, a man who's known and respected all throughout the town of Springfield. Father Richard Levine. Levine hastily explains to the officers that, as a former parish priest and longtime friend of the Croteaus, he's come along with Carl for moral support. Detectives accept this reasoning and welcome both men. Once everyone's settled, they reveal what they know so far. That Danny's body was found in the river and that they suspect his death to have been foul play. They also say that Danny's body has been moved to a local funeral home and that Carl will need to identify it. But this request proves too much for Carl Croteau. At once, his eyes well up with tears and he's lost for words. The thought of identifying his beloved 13-year-old son is clearly too much to bear. To Carl's relief, though, Father Richard Levine offers to step in and do the formal ID himself. He explains that he knew Danny well and would be able to reliably identify him. Carl gratefully accepts this offer, and the two men part ways. Carl rushes home to break the awful news to his wife, while Levine heads off to the funeral home. As the police officers watch the men leave, they have no idea that one of them is about to become their prime suspect. On Sunday, April 16th, the day after Danny Croteau's body was found, one of the officers investigating the case takes a trip back to the crime scene. Although a good deal of evidence was recovered yesterday, it won't hurt to take a second look. So the officer makes his way along the dirt path to the river and stands near the spot where they found Danny's body. It's at this moment that he sees a man walking towards him. As the figure draws closer, the officer recognizes it to be Father Richard Levine, the man who accompanied Carl Croteau to the police station yesterday. Confused as to what Levine's doing at the crime scene, the officer waves him over. Then he asks Levine if he'd mind visiting them again tomorrow and giving an interview. It's not clear why the officer is so keen to speak with Levine. Perhaps he's become suspicious after seeing him lurking around the river. Or maybe he hopes that, as a respected and well-known individual in Springfield, Levine will be able to provide some insight into the crime. Either way, Levine doesn't seem put off by the request. He agrees at once and says he'll drop by tomorrow. On Monday, April 17th, Richard Levine arrives at the police station as promised. But what starts out as a routine interview soon takes a bizarre turn. Rather than simply answering the detective's questions, Levine takes on the role of interviewer himself and starts to ask some of his own. He seems obsessed by strange details of the case and asks officers the following question. If a stone was used and thrown in the river, would the blood still be on it? It's a bizarre thing to bring up and makes detectives wonder how Levine knew to inquire about a stone. There was a brief mention in news coverage speculating whether a rock might have been used, but police never actually confirmed what the murder weapon was, not even to Danny's parents. Levine arouses further suspicion seconds later when he asks about the tire tracks found at the scene. He says, "In such a popular hangout with so many cars and footprints, how can the prints you have be of any help?" Again, it's an odd thing to ask. It's almost as though Levine wants to throw some uncertainty on the case to discredit their evidence. But why? Detectives can't answer that yet, but they're determined to find out. Alarm bells ringing in their ears, they zero in on Levine's relationship with Danny Croteau. Levine willingly explains that Danny was an altar boy at his church, as were several of Danny's brothers. This connection was how Levine came to be so close to the Croteau family. When officers ask Levine if he spent any time alone with Danny, he fiercely shakes his head. He claims that there had always been other people around. Following this, Detectives ask him when the last time he saw Danny was. Levine replies that it was 2 weeks ago when he picked Danny up from Chicopee, a large town a little over 4 miles from Springfield. Interestingly, though, Levine didn't take Danny back to the Croteaus' home. Instead, he took him to where he was living with his own mother and father. And that's not the only strange thing about his story. In confessing that he picked Danny up, Levine undermines his previous statement about not spending any time alone with a teenager. After listening to Levine's words, detectives are satisfied that they've heard enough for now. They let Levine go home, but are deeply suspicious of everything he's told them. They wonder, who really is Richard Levine? Is he the respectable pillar of the community he makes out to be? Or is he hiding a dark, guilty secret? As the days pass and the investigation into the murder of Danny Croteau gets underway, suspicion around Richard Levine grows. Police can't help but notice that he never seems to be far away from the case. On April 18th, the day of Danny's funeral, Levine is the priest who oversees the service. Then, at the wake afterwards, his name is brought up again. When asked by police why they opted for a closed casket, the Croteaus explain that Levine advised them to. Apparently, he told them this would be best considering the injuries to their son's face. Police find this extremely strange. There were no injuries to Danny's face. The only wound was on the back of his head, something Levine himself knows all too well because he identified the body. And Levine's involvement doesn't stop there. On May 2nd, 17 days after Danny's body was found, the Croteaus tell police that they've received two bizarre phone calls from Levine. Apparently, he told them not to contact him anymore. He claimed that it would be best if he doesn't come round to their house again and isn't seen in their company. The Croteaus explain that they were shocked and hurt by this. Levine, a longtime friend and counselor to the family, has suddenly abandoned them at the time they need him most. Police listen carefully as the evidence against Richard Levine piles up. They're convinced he's hiding something.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 4th, 1972, 19 days since Danny Croteau's body was found, Richard Levine is asked to take a lie detector test. But interestingly, it's not the police who issue this request, it's the church. Many Springfield clergy members are certain of Levine's innocence and want to prove that he's telling the truth. So Levine is strapped to a polygraph machine and asked 5 direct questions. Did you strike Danny Croteau's head to cause his death? Did you kill Danny Croteau? Were you present when Danny Croteau was killed? Did you dump Danny Croteau's body in the Chicopee River? Do you know who killed Danny Croteau? The questions are blunt and to the point and would make anyone nervous, but Levine barely flinches as each one is asked. He stares straight into the interviewer's eyes and answers a firm no every time. The needle scratches its results on the paper, and the polygraph expert looks across to study them. However, when the expert bends over the polygraph machine, he frowns in confusion. The results look erratic. There's no distinct pattern to the needle's marking. It's impossible to know whether Levine was telling the truth or not. This inconclusive answer is not what the church was hoping for, so a second round of polygraph tests are arranged for 5 days later, on May 9th. This time, however, Levine passes with flying colors. In fact, he doesn't pass just one test, but two. Levine's innocence in the Danny Croteau murder case is confirmed. He swears he's telling the truth, and the polygraph tests back him up without a doubt. Following his successful lie detector tests, the church is happy that Richard Levine is innocent, and they clear him of all suspicion and allow him back to work. This sentiment of innocence is echoed by the people of Springfield, who welcome Levine back with open arms. He continues preaching to his parishioners and regains his position of authority in the community. For them, it's as though he'd never been the prime suspect in a murder case. Sadly, though, while Levine gets his life back, the Croteaus know that theirs can never be the same again. Danny's parents are left to watch helplessly as the man who was possibly involved in their son's murder walks away scot-free. Although police and detectives are still suspicious of Levine, they have no concrete evidence to prove it. And so the investigation gradually falters and eventually grows cold. Years pass, and the tragedy of Danny Croteau's murder starts to fade from people's memories. However, unbeknown to Levine, the police, or the Croteaus, the story will not end here. Almost two decades later, a damning secret will be revealed which will throw the tragedy back into the spotlight once again. The year is now 1991. Almost two decades have passed since Danny Croteau was murdered, and the case remains unsolved. Police still have their suspicions about Levine, but are no closer to proving his guilt than they were in 1972. But that's about to change. At some point during the year, it's not clear when or why, a group of five men come forward with claims about Richard Levine. Claims which can't be ignored. The men tell police that Levine sexually abused them all as boys. Interestingly, some of the men were friends with Danny Croteau. They reveal to the police that Levine sexually abused numerous young boys from within his church in Springfield. The boys were too afraid to speak up at the time, and Levine continued getting away with it. That was until Danny Croteau. According to the men, after Levine sexually abused Danny, Danny threatened to expose him and tell everyone of his crimes. The men explain that this made Levine nervous, and so they believe he killed Danny to prevent him from speaking up. This testimony is groundbreaking. It provides Levine with a strong motive to have committed the murder. Not only this, the testimony also implies Levine is guilty of another felony, sexual abuse. Allegations of this nature are deeply serious and could result in lengthy prison time. So police set about building a case against Levine in the hope that they'll unearth more evidence of his dark, twisted past. As it turns out, police don't have to do much digging. Word of the sexual abuse charges spreads like wildfire through the town of Springfield. The bravery of the five men who initially came forward soon triggers others to air their demons. All in all, a total of 43 men go public with similar claims against Levine. And that's not all. While investigating the accusations, police discover that similar allegations were made against Levine as far back as May 1972, just 1 month after Danny Croteau was murdered. Police files show that officers interviewed Danny's four brothers and heard that three of them had been sexually abused by Levine while they were choir boys in his church. These allegations weren't explored further during the initial investigation because police wanted to focus on the murder charge. They were concerned that if they took both felonies to court, murder and sexual abuse, and Levine was found innocent, then all charges would be dropped and they would have no case against Levine. However, now that there's a multitude of sexual abuse claims against him, police have little choice but to act. Putting his murder suspicions aside, they indict Levine on various counts of sexual abuse and set a trial date for June 1992. Police are hopeful that this time, he'll be brought to justice. However, it's not to be. On June 26, 1992, for reasons which aren't clear, the prosecution offers Levine a plea deal. They promise that if he admits his guilt to just two of the many sexual abuse cases, he'll receive 10 years of probation and not a single day behind bars. Instead, he'll undergo treatment at a hospital in Maryland that specializes in dealing with men who have committed sexual crimes against children. He'll also be forbidden to work as a priest, although he can continue claiming monthly allowances from the church. It hardly seems like a punishment at all, and unsurprisingly, Levine leaps at the opportunity and takes the deal. To many people in Springfield, especially the Croteaus, it seems as though Levine is untouchable. He's been a prime suspect in a murder case and had numerous allegations of sexual abuse cast against him, but has emerged unscathed. Frustratingly, it will continue this way for over a decade. As the years pass and the town of Springfield moves forward, many come to accept the sad fact that Levine will never be brought to justice. The date is now March 2004, 12 years since Richard Levine dodged justice by taking a plea bargain, and 32 years since Danny Croteau was murdered. Interest in the Croteau case has faded somewhat over the years, but it's never disappeared completely. So when investigators are sifting through emails on an unrelated case and find one with Levine's name attached, their interest is piqued. The email is written by a member of the clergy and describes a conversation Levine had with a friend about a letter he claims to have received. The email's writer says that Levine was sent a letter from the person who murdered Danny Croteau. It was allegedly sent to him just 2 months ago, in January 2004. Curious as to who wrote the mysterious letter and what it said, police obtain a warrant to search Levine's house. He still lives nearby in Chicopee, so they decide to pay him a visit. When police knock on Levine's door, he answers them politely and asks to see their warrant. Once he's satisfied with it, he invites them inside and hands over the strange letter. Levine is quick to tell police that he thought the letter was suspicious from the moment it reached him. It had no return address and no signature at the bottom. What's more, it was typed as opposed to handwritten, so there was no chance of recognizing the writing. Levine then explains that, due to these suspicions, he removed the letter from the envelope using tweezers and put it in a plastic bag before reading. What he doesn't elaborate on, though, is why, if he thought it was so suspect, he didn't bring it to the attention of police sooner. When officers read the letter, they're not sure what to make of it. It doesn't claim responsibility for Danny's death, as the email said it did. Rather, it offers sympathy for Levine and addresses what it calls his conflict within. The letter states that Levine was plagued by conflicts and base compulsions, which drove him to, quote, do things he deeply felt were nauseating. What these things were, it doesn't elaborate, but the implication is that they were sexual acts against young boys. The letter goes on to say that Levine met a boy along the Chicopee River who drove him beyond the brink of control. It concludes with the chilling lines, "Your torment must be unbearable." The reference to the boy at the Chicopee River makes it clear that it's alluding to Levine's involvement in Danny Croteau's murder. But who would write such a letter and send it to Levine? Why did Levine keep it a secret for over 2 months? And can it help solve the murder case once and for all? Frustratingly, the answers to these questions will take time. And in a case as old as this, that's something not everyone has. Danny Croteau's parents sadly pass away in 2010 and 2016, never knowing what really happened to their son. They're survived by Danny's brothers, who take the baton and promise to find the truth. Eventually, their efforts pay off, and Danny's case is picked up by the Springfield District Attorney. The DA's mission is to reassess unsolved cases, starting with the oldest ones in the state, such as Danny's. In 2021, Detective Michael McNally is assigned to the cold case, and he sets about reassessing all of the evidence. From the very start, McNally can see that one name continually crops up, Richard Levine. McNally notices how Levine was involved from 1972 all the way through to 2004, when he handed police the suspicious letter. Considering this, there's only one logical action to take. McNally decides to speak with Richard Levine. On April 14th, 2021, Detective McNally visits Levine. Now 80 years old and suffering from a hip and shoulder fracture, Levine is staying in a hospital in Greenfield, Massachusetts. McNally pushes open the door to Levine's room and sees the former priest sitting in bed about to tuck into a bowl of soup. Physically, Levine is a shadow of the man he used to be. His once powerful frame has shrunk with age, but he still has the same piercing blue eyes, and now they seem to look right through McNally. McNally introduces himself and tells Levine why he's here. "I want to get to know you because of a case I'm looking into, Father," he says. "It's going on 50 years. Danny Croteau?" "Oh, God," Levine responds, but doesn't elaborate. McNally goes on. "So much has been said, so much has been written, but there is a truth." And just like that, the two men begin their conversation, one which will stretch over 5 days and reveal groundbreaking information about Levine's involvement in the Danny Croteau murder. Before each visit, Levine is reminded of his rights, and McNally ensures that he's not under the influence of any medication. At first, it's a slow, painful process, as Levine swears his innocence and paints himself as a misunderstood victim. He claims to have been unfairly depicted in the media and shunned by his own church. But Levine doesn't keep this narrative up for long. Across a total of 11 hours of patient questioning by McNally, Levine starts to reveal details that he's never shared before. One of these details is that Levine harbored a grudge against Danny. Levine explains that he found Danny to be dumb but charming. Shortly after saying this, Levine goes even further. He tells McNally something that contradicts what he's been saying these past 49 years. Levine admits to having been at the river with Danny on the day he died. He says that he struck Danny with an object after getting into a physical altercation. He claims that Danny was injured, so Levine ran off. But Levine insists that when he left, Danny was very much alive. Levine claims that it was only when he returned a short while later that he saw Danny floating face down in the river. After hearing this, McNally interrupts and asks Levine what he did when he saw the body. Levine replies that he didn't tell anyone, not his friends or the police. Then, Levine shrugs hopelessly and says, quote, "I just remember being heartbroken when I saw his body going down the river, knowing I was responsible for giving him a good shove." Although Levine admits to pushing Danny and being with him on the day he died, he doesn't quite admit to killing him. What's more, he doesn't give any motives for the fight or even address the claims of sexual abuse. All the same, his confessions are a huge step forward in the cold case. Police finally have confirmation that Levine was at the crime scene and also that he was involved in a physical altercation with Danny. Coupled with his history of sexual abuse, these details should make it extremely easy to prove that Levine killed Danny Croteau. And when McNally leaves the hospital later that day, he's determined that when he returns, it will be to arrest Richard Levine. 17 days later, on May 21st, the district attorney gives McNally the go-ahead to arrest Levine. They've taken another look at the mysterious letter from 2004, the one that accused Levine of having a conflict within and being tormented by his own actions. Experts believe that the style the letter is written in is consistent with Levine's own way of talking. The implication is that Levine wrote the letter himself in an attempt to deflect blame and send police looking in the wrong direction. If this is the case, then there's now a wealth of evidence against Levine. His confessions to McNally, the charges of sexual abuse, and the suspicious letter. The district attorney is satisfied that it's enough to warrant Levine's arrest. For all involved in the case, this is huge. Levine has been suspected of murder for decades, but never charged or convicted. This is the moment they've all been waiting for. At 5:39 p.m., Detective McNally rushes out of the Springfield police station, jumps into his car, and heads to the hospital. In his bag is the warrant for Levine's arrest. McNally tears through the corridors of the hospital and heads straight to Levine's room. However, when he's seconds away from knocking on Levine's door, A solemn-faced doctor walks out. McNally flashes his police badge and explains he's here to arrest Levine. But the doctor has some bad news. Levine passed away that afternoon from complications related to COVID-19. In fact, Levine's official time of death was 5:40 p.m., literally 1 minute after McNally received the warrant for his arrest. McNally and the entire Springfield police force are crushed. After 11 hours of interviews, 5 painstaking days encouraging the truth from Levine, and almost 50 years of wondering what really happened, Levine has done the impossible once again. He's escaped justice. Now he'll never pay for the murder of Danny Croteau. At a press conference the following Monday, the district attorney addresses the case. He announces to reporters and journalists that the facts, as they are now, prove that Levine killed Danny. The DA even plays snippets of Levine's interviews, in which he shared details about his physical altercation with Danny. The DA's summary leaves no room for doubt. As far as he's concerned, Danny died at the hands of Levine. After 49 years, the case is closed. On Monday, June 28, 2021, Danny Croteau's surviving family arranges a memorial service. Danny's short life is celebrated as people pass around pictures of him, share stories, and remember him as the innocent, clever, hopeful boy whose life was so cruelly cut short. 2 of Danny's brothers give him a fitting send-off at the end. Carl Jr. and his brother Joe stand shoulder to shoulder and play a rendition of Danny Boy in memory of the brother they lost. Although Levine never served justice for what he did, at least the Croteaus can take comfort in the fact that the truth was eventually revealed. After decades of tragedy, they might finally be able to get the closure they so deserve. Next week on Deathbed Confessions, we meet America's most infamous serial killer. In February 1974, Washington State is plunged into fear when a 22-year-old woman goes missing. Following her disappearance, 5 more women vanish from the state. There are no traces of any of them. Police are baffled and the public terrified as they try to hunt down this elusive killer. The abductions and murders spread through the nation and haunt America for almost 2 years until police finally find the man they believe to be responsible. He's an attractive, charming law student, and his name is Ted Bundy.
Deathbed Confessions is a Spotify original from Parcast, produced in partnership with Noiser. Executive produced by Max Cutler, Drew Cole, and Pascal Hughes. Developed by Julian Boireau for Parcast. Series produced by Addison Nugent. Associate producer Nicole Edmonds. Written by Rob Scragg. Supervising editor Jane O. Sound supervisor Tom Pink. Sound design by Cody Reynolds Shaw. Edited by Carla Flores and Rob Plummer. Mix master by Cody Reynolds Shaw. Music by Oliver Baines and Dory McCauley.